The Daily Mirror calls on you.
Football is about nothing unless it's about something. And what it is about.
I am going to get 100% out of you.
Welcome to the Mirror Football Podcast. Back from holiday, my name is Steve Anglesey. Later on, we've got Jeff Stelling for you. We've got Oliver Holt talking about the Rooney Rule. But first, as always, come in Rudolf Nureyev. How are we?
Mate, Rudolf the Red Bull's reindeer. That's what my moves are like on the dance floor.
It is, of course, Robbie Savage, footballer, author, best-selling author, and now dancer. Strictly Come Dancing starts on Saturday. We're not going to spoil the surprise by saying who you've been partnered with. How's it been going so far in training, Robbie?
Yeah, well, we've done the group dance, so that'll be going out on Saturday. That was pre-recorded on Wednesday night. I met my partner Wednesday night. Really excited, but mate, I'm hopeless. Seriously, mate, I look Anne Widdecombe, look like an Irish dancer.
Well, that's a difficult job. That's a difficult job. I mean, it's been quite difficult, hasn't it, for the Welsh? Because in the football, you got seeded with England and Montenegro in the football group. In the rugby World Cup rugby group, you got seeded with South Africa and Samoa, and now you've been seeded with Russell Grant and Edwina Curry. It's hard.
I've got to say, the Russell Grant, what a great guy he is.
he's a big non-league football fan.
Yeah, massively into his football, mate, hugely. But all the cast are great, you know, all the guys are great, the women are great. Holly, you know, I was sitting next to Holly Valance yesterday, and
yeah,
really, isn't it?
it's not bad, is it? It's better than sitting on the bench next to Nigel Clough, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, listen, this year probably I'd have been sitting on a bench at a League One or League Two club or on a Championship club, you know, next to a guy with shin pads on covered in winter green. You know, with Under Armour on and all sitting next to Ollie Rowland as well. What would you do?
So have you spent much time with the other contestants yet, apart from doing your group dance?
Yeah, I've had a week with them all. You know, you grow really close to each other. It's like a team. You know, Rory Bremner's doing impressions, you know, talking to Ollie about boxing, or lack of it.
Yeah, you've been giving him a few tips, have you?
Who else? Jason Donovan is, you know, he's practices. Harry Judd, what a great guy he is from McFly. I bonded with him really well. He's a very good dancer. He won the Cumber Relief one, so I am completely into the underdog. You know, I'm not allowed to say vote for me or my partner because that's beyond the rules. So what I need you to do is you to Daily Mirror to do it for me and everybody, you know, do it for me because. You can't do it, but I'm going to need every vote I can get off through Twitter, through campaigns, because, you know, when you see me dance, I think you'll actually laugh.
Now, I mean, most people would say that as a footballer, obviously, you know, it's all about your feet and movement and everything, and a footballer should be naturally good at it. Is that not the case? What's the hard bit about it?
It's different parts of your body, the way you move. I know you move your feet, but... You know, I can't actually go on 2 foot Edwina Curry, can I?
Well, if you could, it would be it'd be a ratings winner. Certainly, I would be watching that.
Do you know what I mean? So
get stuck into Jason Donovan early doors. Give him the reducer.
Yeah. Sliding tackle on Jason Donovan, followed by a, you know, 2-footed lunging on Allison. I think that would go down really well.
Yeah, it probably would. Have you done any dancing before?
Do you know what, mate? On Saturday. When it goes out, that people say that is my first ever dance I've ever done.
Right.
I've danced drunkenly in a nightclub, whatever, with the boys. But you know, in terms of a routine or anything, that's the first one I've ever done. Even at a wedding, I had my first dance with my wife at my wedding, which I was really shy at.
Yeah.
So that's basically the only other dance I've ever done to a routine. But look, I was sweating so much. My hand palms were dripping of sweat. Yeah, I've never been so nervous in all my life. You'll see it, and you'll see my reaction on Saturday, because I was the first one to be paired up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I was standing next to Sir Bruce Forster, which was obviously great as well. And I was the first one to be paired up. And, you know, I think mine was a bit of a shock who I got to people. And I was just, man, I didn't know what to do. And I just stood there and I was so shy. And everybody else, when they got their partners, were jumping on each other. Looks like me and my partner didn't want each other. It looks like that. But we just seemed complete shock because, you know, you talk in the cast and you talk with the other people and you say, who do you think he'll get? Who do you think he'll get? And the one I got, nobody ever would have got 1,000 to 1.
Well, blimey. Well, it's so what time's that on Saturday?
6:10 BBC One.
And then you're 6:06 on. So you're not doing ESPN this weekend, no?
Yes, I am, because it's pre-recorded.
Oh, it's pre-recorded, right, of course.
So I can do my ESPN doing Bolton United.
Excellent. Well, that'll be a good game. We'll talk about that in a minute. So, I mean, it's going to be difficult for you, isn't it? Because you've not done this kind of thing before. Would it help if the audience sort of chanted Robbie Savage is a wanker while you were doing the Foxtrot?
That would probably steer me on. Yeah. That's what probably needs to happen.
Yeah, or Brucey gave it a bit of jippo. that could do it for you. Who's your favourite? What was your first dance at your wedding? What song was that to?
Robbie Williams.
Yeah. Angels.
Who's been sending me emails of good luck. So, you know, I've got him on my side. I've got Chris Miles. I was on his show. I've got him on my side. He's going to come and watch. You know, so I've got good people on my side. Obviously, you guys. So, you never know if I can come across the underdog. And
yeah,
you never know, mate. You never know what people look for. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you just need to wind up. You need to wind up the bloke from McFly so he headbutts you. I think that's the that's basically the key to this. The key to success, I think. Is there a dance from a film or something like that? Are you into, you know, who's your favourite dancer?
I don't really watch. It was funny last night because the people on the table, you have to do different interviews at different tables, and they said, Robbie, which dance are you looking forward to most? The Pasodoble or the waltz? And I went, seriously, what is a Pasodoble, what else is there?
Yeah, I mean,
that's my knowledge of dancing, mate. So they were saying, which one would you really like to do? And I don't know, ballroom, Latin. They were saying all these names of me, and I just thought it was all the same dance but different moves. I haven't got a clue.
My confidence in you winning this is slipping now, I've got to say. It's ebbing. I mean, I would have thought you were a sort of Saturday Night Fever man, because obviously when we've seen
I've got the old shoe shuffle, you know what I mean? I can do that, like, you know, you do your side feet, you can do all that, but...
Yeah, yeah.
I can't put one foot in front of the other.
And obviously, because obviously when I saw you in that pink open neck shirt with your tan and your teeth, it reminded me very much of the Bee Gees, so... maybe a bit of Night Fever.
I can't sing either, so basically I'm just a waste of space. Seriously.
Oh, well, we'll be watching this weekend. Can you get voted off this weekend, no?
No,
so it's this...
Oh, thank God.
No. Okay, so we watch this weekend and then...
And then it
all starts for real. Okay.
And that's when we need to support me and my partner, who is... Can't say yet, can we?
No, we can't say yet. Yeah, guilty. Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be a good one for you. Yeah, guilty. Yeah.
You know my partner. Do you think it's a good match?
I think it's a very good match, yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I think that's one of the best you could have got, definitely.
Thanks.
Definitely, yeah, yeah. Excellent. All right, well, let's move on to some football. Now, yeah, I know. Well, we could talk about this all day, couldn't we? Let's talk a bit more about it. So the lad from McFly you really hit it off with. You really hit it off with Russell Grant.
Yeah.
What about Nancy?
Nancy, oh, wow, I think Nancy's a bit of a diva, isn't she? She was dancing in sunglasses once up one of the rehearsals. Mate, she was dancing in sunglasses.
Oh, man alive.
What is happening here? She wouldn't take her sunglasses off. Big, massive sunglasses. Brilliant.
She's a hot-blooded Latino woman, obviously. Yeah. She'll be quite decent, won't she?
Who did she... Yeah. Oh, yeah, she got somebody... Yeah, I think who she got to be a good partnership, yeah.
Yeah.
But she was next to me in the dance on Saturday, you'll see, and what you can't do, you can't look to the person next to you, because if they go wrong...
Right.
It makes you go wrong.
Yes.
So it was just, I had three of me just shut my eyes in, because... Because if I look at anybody else, that kills me. You're going to see it, mate, Saturday. I hope they cut, to be fair, I hope they don't cut to me when I've gone wrong. My hands were that sweaty when I was doing twists. I was letting go of the hands. And to be fair, everybody must be in the same boot. To be fair, mate, what you're doing to do on the first show is peak.
No, sorry, I mean, you've definitely not done that.
That was in my mind. Don't peak.
Yeah, save it all. Save it all up for the final.
For the live show. If I peaked last night, people think he's good.
Yeah.
But if I just try and be shit last night, people think, fair, you can improve.
Very good. Very good. All right, football then. Football yeah. matters. I mean, you can't get voted off till next week, but...
I know what you do, mate. You have two. So you have in 3 weeks, on the 30th of September is the first live.
Oh, right, okay.
That weekend, you have seven on one night and seven the next night, and then the weekend after is when you can get voted off. So I've got at least another one dance.
Right, okay, yeah.
Anyway, and then the following week is the live vote. So it's right. Live show in two or 3 weeks' time, and then it's the live, then a week after that is another live where you can get voted off. So I've definitely got one more show dance
yeah.
before I can get voted out.
Have you thought of doing the Crouchy Robot?
No, I can't even do that.
All right, Robbie Savage. All right, Robbie Savage, we'll see you next week.
Cheers, Barry. Cheers, Stephen.
Cheers, pal. Keep dancing.
Keep on dancing.
Thanks again to Robbie Savage. Now, in one of the grinding gear changes for which the Mirror Football podcast has been rightly acclaimed, we're going to talk about an article which appeared on Mirror Football and in the Daily Mirror this week. Very thought-provoking article. Its author was Oliver Holt, and its subject was the Rooney Rule. How are you, Ollie?
I'm good, thanks, Steve.
Okay, mate, can you explain for people who don't know what the Rooney Rule is?
Okay, yeah, it was... introduced in 2003
into the NFL,
it applies to the NFL, American football in the States. It was introduced by the name given to it has nothing to do with our own Wayne Rooney. It was Dan Rooney, who's the owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the rule essentially is that if a vacancy for a senior coaching position, a head coaching position, comes up at an NFL team, then the interview process has to include at least one candidate from an ethnic minority. Obviously, usually in the States, that means a black candidate or a Hispanic candidate. And it has been an outstanding success, Steve, as you know, in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree with this. I thought it was a great piece and very, very, very thought-provoking. A lot of people, a lot of correspondents on your Twitter, which is at Ollie Holt Mirror, I believe, a lot of people didn't. Let's talk about their reaction. What was the reaction that you had to that piece? Because it was one of the biggest reactions you've had on Twitter, I think.
It was, absolutely, absolutely. It kind of took me by surprise, really, and certainly a lot of the negativity took me by surprise, because I think there's one misconception which sadly people didn't seem to be able to overcome, was that this is some form of positive discrimination, and that the Rooney Rule would force clubs in this country to football clubs, which obviously we're talking about trying to create an equivalent of a Rooney Rule for English football clubs, but that it would force English clubs to appoint a black manager or an ethnic minority manager. And that's not the point of the Rooney Rule at all. The point is just to give black candidates or minority candidates a chance to be interviewed, just one of them to be interviewed, just to be able to put their credentials across. And you know, there's no question of giving people an unfair advantage here in terms of getting the job. It's just giving them an opportunity to put their case.
Yeah, to get in the room, isn't it? Right, to get in the room.
Exactly, get them in the room. And, you know, and people, again, a lot of people saying, and I understand this point of view, and I think it's a point of view that is aired quite a lot in the States too, is a lot of people saying, well, that's just tokenism. It's also demeaning to black candidates. It's just going to be gesture politics. Now, I understand that point of view, and I think in many, you know, it's a valid objection, except that it didn't work that way in the NFL. You know, in the NFL, Before the Rooney Rule came in, I think there were only two. Obviously, there aren't as many NFL clubs out of 32. I think there are only two black managers, black head coaches, and now that has, you know, now there are eight. We've seen head coaches leading teams to the Super Bowl. In fact, I think in 2007, both the head coaches of the Super Bowl teams were black head coaches. So, you know, it has had a real effect in the States, and I think there's no reason to think it couldn't have a real effect here.
Now, I mean, just going on the percentage and the proportion of black players in English football, or minority players in English football over the last, 25 years, we could say. I mean, it's quite obvious that that's not reflected in the number of black managers or minority managers. Why is that the case? Have people been reluctant to hire minority guys? Is there inherent institutional racism in the way that chairmen select managers, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, it's a big question, and there are a lot of factors. I think one of the reasons that people state, and again with some degree of fairness, I think, is that there aren't as many black coaching candidates. And, you know, again on Twitter, even this morning, people doing straw polls of their friends who have been on coaching courses, saying, well, you know, there were a course of 20 candidates, students or whatever, on these coaching courses, only one black guy out of 20. Now, so therefore their point is that black coaches simply aren't applying for managerial positions. Now, as with all these things, there's a level of fairness in that. I think that's partly true. But then you go one sort of, one level deeper, and you say, okay, so why aren't there people on these courses? And I think the answer to that, Steve, is because as Paul Davis said to me when I spoke to him a couple of days ago for that article, you know, because when he suggests to black players who are approaching the end of their career that they do their coaching badges, they laugh in his face because they say, well, what's the point? Because there aren't any... Yeah. What's the point in me devoting my time to that? Because there aren't any opportunities at the end of it, because they don't see anybody coming through. You were talking about percentages. There are 25% of the players in our league are black or from ethnic minorities. 2% of managers. We've got two black managers out of 92 clubs.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's a very stark statistic, isn't it?
And look, there's something wrong. Your point about institutional racism. You know, I hesitate to say that. You know, I know a lot of chairmen and chief executives, and I hesitate to say that football in this country is institutionally racist. But we have two black managers out of 92. The numbers don't correspond to the numbers playing. That, you know, there's not the progression that there should be. Something is wrong, and something is broken. And I'm not saying that clubs are institutionally racist, or that the English football is institutionally racist. I am saying, which is fact, that of the 92 clubs, if you go into the boardrooms of those 92 clubs, how many black faces are you going to see? How many black people are there on boards in this country, I would say a minute percentage. And I think that inevitably that is going to have some, that's going to have some knock-on effect when it comes to hiring.
Yes, I totally agree with you, and it is a classic catch 22, isn't it? People aren't coming on taking their coaching badges because they know that there's nothing down for them, and in a wider sense, there's a relatively low percentage of minority people who actually attend football games because of what went on in the 1970s and the 1980s and the kind of atmosphere that there was then, we've eradicated that, we've almost eradicated that, we're trying to encourage those people into the grounds. I don't understand why there's a resistance to try to encourage and empower people to take on senior positions in management and in at board level in clubs. I can't really see this argument. It kind of comes down to whether you believe in positive discrimination or whatever it is to a degree, but as you said at the top there, this isn't saying you must appoint a black manager, like there's a quota system in certain jobs in the police force and what have you in the BBC. It's not a quota system, it's just saying let's get a guy in the room and hey, you're still going to choose the best guy for the job, but it's a chance for people, right?
Absolutely. It's not a quota system at all. You're right. And I think to say that some of these misconceptions are very damaging. There seems to be this knee-jerk sort of fear about these kind of moves and these initiatives. And, again, I understand that. But we are not talking, we're not talking about quota systems here. We're just talking about giving people a chance to put themselves forward. Nothing more. Nothing more. There's no... there's no forcing of club chairman to appoint a black candidate or a minority candidate. There's nothing like that. And look, in terms of the chance of getting themselves in the room, again, I think it's interesting that I spoke to when I was speaking to Paul Davis the other day. I was met him in a hotel in Kensington with a prominent American lawyer called Cyrus Mary, who was. One of the influential figures with Dan Rooney on getting the Rooney Rule adopted in the NFL. He's come over to talk to the PFA. He's been brought over by the PFA, but to talk to the Premier League and the FA and the Football League about this. And he was saying when the rule was first adopted in the NFL in 2003, that Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, his idea of implementing the rule was that he interviewed all the white candidates face to face, but the black candidate he wanted to interview him over the phone, and the Cyrus Mary had to say to him, actually, that's not really how this is intended to work. Yeah. It's about giving people just an equal opportunity to impress you, and that's all it's about. And for the people who say it's tokenism and it's degrading to the black candidates, well, you may say that, but actually what they argue and what they've found in the NFL is that when people are given a chance to impress, actually sometimes the people who are doing the hiring are surprised by what they find.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and surprise people come out of it, and as you say, Mike Tomlin and people like that have had great success. Where just finally on this one, where does this campaign go now? Because they're obviously in meetings with the PFA and the League Managers Association, those kind of people. Is that right?
Yes, that is right. I mean, I think there was a preliminary meeting took place yesterday, and I think as a result of that, clearly there will have to be discussions with the Premier League and the Football League, and the hope, I think certainly the PFA's hope, and I know Gordon Taylor has been quite proactive in this, chief executive, is that the Premier League and the Football League will adopt some form of equivalent of the Rooney Rule, and it's a question of persuading the persuading the chairman and the boards of the clubs to go along with that. I mean, this is only at second hand, but I've seen it reported that Richard Scudamore, the chief executive of the Premier League, is broadly in favour of the idea. And if that is true, that will be a huge step in getting the Premier League to ratify something like this. I mean, it will be a big change, because as people were pointing out yesterday and have been pointing out, it would also probably push the Premier League towards a difference of the Premier League clubs. It would make them change their habits of
how they hire a manager.
The actual process of appointing a manager, because they couldn't sort of line somebody up and then sack an existing manager and then spirit somebody straight in. You'd have to have a much more formal process. Now, okay, that is going to be a bit of a culture shock, but again, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
No. Well, it's absolutely fascinating. I mean, just as a sideline to that, I think that we mentioned the PFA there, and there is an example of an organisation which is actually representative of its members, isn't it? In the fact that there are a lot of guys. Paul Davis is one of them. Who
Brendan,
you know, the,
Batson,
Brendan Batson,
the past,
yeah, exactly.
Chris Powell, absolutely. Very articulate and very able. Very able people.
Yeah, and we shouldn't really have to say that they're articulate and able people. They are just people. But that's a great example, and the PFA do get an awful lot of stick, but this is one thing that I think they're right about. Just very quickly then, we've got Jeff Stelling coming up in a second. We'll be talking about the England performance and the Premier League weekend. Now, another thing you wrote this week was it wasn't a eulogy for Frank Lampard. It wasn't entirely saying that he was nobody should have a go at Frank Lampard. You've been a big supporter of Frank Lampard. He was obviously dropped for the Bulgaria game. He played in the Wales game. He didn't play great. I'm not sure that was entirely his fault. He's not had a brilliant start to the season. You know Frank Lampard a little bit, I know. What do you think of Frank Lampard's future now? He's 33, right? That's the key issue, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think that is the key issue. And, every player grows older, and every player has to accept changing circumstances and changing positions within a squad or a team. And look, I haven't spoken to Lampard personally about this, but I saw what he said this week in the aftermath of the win over Wales. And it seems to me that he is a bright man. We all know he's an intelligent guy. He knows that he is not a guaranteed starter in the England team anymore, and that much like Beckham had to do several years ago, he probably is moving into a stage of his international career where he is going to look at some starts and sometimes being on the bench. He's going to accept that some of his performances for England are going to be cameos, and that he's, other players are coming through and putting a lot of pressure on him. But I think where I disagree with some of the criticism is that there seems to have been a real glee about Frank Lampard being dropped.
Yes, I agree.
Against Bulgaria. And I must admit, I don't really understand that, because I think in the context of an England side that has generally underachieved, and nobody would really disagree with that, I suppose, or if we haven't underachieved, we haven't matched our own very high expectations of the team, put it that way. In that context, Lampard has been a very, very good player for England and an extremely good player for his club, who has reached elite status. He's played in Champions League finals, he's been a fixture of the England midfield for 10 years. Now, it's not his fault entirely that we haven't won major honours with England. That responsibility is shared throughout the team, and yet he seems to have been one of the main one that people have picked on to sort of air their disappointments and their grievances at our failure to match expectations. And I just think that there is still a place for Lampard in the squad. I can see that it's going to be harder and harder for him to nail down a place in the starting 11. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of Jack Wilshere. I think when he comes back, he is as close as we're going to get to a guaranteed starter in that midfield. And I thought that the midfield against Bulgaria, or the setup we had against Bulgaria, was terrific. And those three players who were playing just behind Wayne Rooney in Bulgaria, Stuart Downing, Ashley Young and Theo Walcott, were superb. And the way that they drifted from position to position, the fluidity, I thought it was great. And, you know, it was difficult for Lampard to fit into that kind of setup where we had Barry holding and we had Scott Parker holding. It was difficult for Lampard to force his way into that. But I think Capello will play different formations for different matchups, and I think there will be occasions where Lampard will still have a crucial part to play.
Yeah. I agree with you. I mean, the glee thing I can't really understand. It's hard for me. I can understand why some people don't like Wayne Rooney. I can understand why some people don't like Ashley Cole or John Terry. I can't really understand why a lot of people seem to dislike Frank Lampard. I can't really get to grips with that. I don't know whether it's because he's perceived as being middle class or... I honestly don't know. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's partly what I just said, that he's an easy scapegoat. He's been there for a long time because he's so good. And I think, look, I've been sort of searching my mind for it as well, because I share your mystification at the treatment he gets. I think you have to say that part of it comes from a very vocal section of West Ham fans who appear to sort of really hate him, and that's a word I hesitate to use, but that certainly appears to be the reaction to him from a lot of supporters of West Ham from his time there. And I think that those kind of sentiments have continued while he's been an England player, and I think maybe that's part of the reason for the glee that was there. I mean, that really is about the best I can come up with, that and his association with... I heard somebody saying last week, you know, he's a poster boy for the golden generation, and people have this scorn, quite rightly in many ways, for the idea that we had a golden generation.
Yeah.
And I think Frank was, I suppose, one of the de facto leaders of the golden generation, so therefore he is getting a lot of the flak now that it's clear that, you know, the golden generation has had its last chance, basically. And I think what it is, and this is something that I find excusable in some ways, people are just desperate to put the years of disappointment behind them. They're desperate for a team to match their expectations, and they, as is often the case, they want a totally new start, and they want to get rid of all the reminders of the bad times and the disappointments, and getting rid of Frank for them is a way of doing that.
Yeah. Okay, let's wrap it up there. That's really great, Ollie. See you soon, man.
Cheers, Steve.
Thanks, buddy. Bye-bye. And next on the Mirror Football podcast, it's wonderful to welcome back the great Jeff Stelling. Jeff, there's only one topic on the nation's lips this week. How on earth is Robbie Savage going to win Strictly Come Dancing?
Well, if it was a talking competition, not a dancing competition, he'd be home and hose, wouldn't he? You know, he's got the gift of the gab. It's just a question of whether he has, you know, the gift of the samba or whatever else, you know. Yep. I don't know. I've never seen Sav's knees close up, but I imagine that over the years they've taken a bit of a hammering.
I would have thought so.
Yeah, I've got a feeling, you know, he wasn't the smoothest mover on a football field, and I think it's going to be the same on the old ballroom floor.
I think if he can outlast Russell Grant, I think he can view that as a result. Maybe take Edwina Curry down, you know.
Yeah.
Are you a bit of a dancer, Jeff? Have you got twinkle toes?
I was when I was a kid, when I was 18, 19, for about 2 or 3 years, I went to ballroom dancing classes, believe it or not.
Beautiful.
The principal reason for that was that it was that you were guaranteed to be provided with a female partner. So it was the easiest place to meet girls, the easiest place you could imagine. And, you know, there was a bar there as well. And I mean, the other great thing about it was that even if the girl you were dancing with, you know, for part of that evening wasn't to your taste, then generally speaking, there'd be one of these dances where you pass your partner on, you know, some course of the night. So you've got, you know, several others as well. So I thoroughly recommend it.
If only life in general was so simple as the old ballroom.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're week off for international duty, Soccer Saturday back this week, and the Super Six, obviously. When you look at what's happened in the transfer window, Jeff, what names do you expect to be calling out this week?
Oh, well, it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, obviously, everybody's going to be looking at Arsenal for a start. I mean, it's a natural thing. So, and when you look at the opposition, have got Swansea, it's a chance for people to make it. You know, for Arteta, for instance, to make an immediate impact there, but. You know, we shall see. I mean, I'd look out for Peter Crouch, obviously, because I think he's a perfect fit for Stoke, and he was in against his old club Liverpool, so I think he'd be certainly one to keep an eye on this weekend.
I mean, you could actually see, you know, you could see a couple of upsets there. I don't know, you know. Wolves v Spurs is the other one I'm looking at and thinking. Wolves, unbeaten, aren't they, so far? Spurs looked pretty poor against Man City, although Man City very good.
Yeah, I mean, it's a possibility, you know, and I like Wolves. I think they've got a lot of attacking flair, you know. Matt Jarvis is in the fantasy football team, that sort of thing. But I think it's been a bit of a false start for Spurs. Played okay for an hour against Manchester United. You know, they came up against the Manchester City team when City were flying, when there was all sorts of speculation going on about Spurs players. You know, and obviously half a dozen of them have left. But Modric has stayed, and the key thing to me is, you know, how Modric knuckles down now, and will we see the real Luka Modric stand up? And I think we probably will, by all accounts. You know, I don't know him at all. Everybody says he's a smashing lad, and I think he'll start to perform, especially with Scott Parker, you know, alongside him. So, you know, and Mr. Capello did Harry a favour this week by, you know, deciding not to play Scott Parker on Tuesday night.
Second game, yeah.
Yeah, and I think you'll find it that Spurs a different proposition from this weekend onwards. So, I mean, I'd be looking out for them as well, that's for sure, for Modric and Parker.
So you think Luka Modric he'll have got his head right? I just want Luka Modric to get his hair right. It's absolutely appalling.
Not much danger of that, I would think. But his head right, yeah, because, you know, when he's at his best. I remember being in Milan last year for the Milan-Tottenham game.
Oh, yeah.
Tottenham won 1-0, you know, and it is absolute. With 70 minutes gone, it was all hands to the pump defensively for Spurs, and Milan were giving them a bit of a battering, you know, and Harry decides that he'd bring on Modric, who wasn't fit enough to start. I thought, what's he doing? You know, bring on some big hugging defender, you know, not some 5'5", nimble-footed midfield player. But he did bring him on, and Modric got the ball, and from that moment onwards, Milan never got the ball back, you know, and he ran the last 20 minutes brilliantly, and I don't think there are many players in the world who could do that, let alone the Premier League. So, you know, I think if we see him anywhere near back at his best, we'll see a different sort of Spurs.
Well, that sounds heartening. I mean, you've touched on the Champions League then, and of course, Champions League football returning very soon.
Yeah.
We just had the draw. That was, I mean, of all the sort of the turmoil that came that Sky suffered in the early stages of last season, which we won't go over now. The one thing that emerged from it was I thought that the Champions League coverage with yourself, with Graeme Souness, with Ray Wilkins was really outstanding. Even though it may have been a little bit thrown together, what are those two guys like to work with? And is Souness as spiky as off the camera as he appears to be on the camera? Is Souness a ballroom dancer? I can't imagine that.
Yeah, again, I'm not sure whether his knees would do it. Is he a spike? Well, not to me. I mean, he is fantastic, charming company. He's a guy who, I mean, we tend to travel out the day before if we're on the road, you know? And he's great company to be with, you know? He likes a good wine, you know, and he knows what he likes, if you know what I mean. So I just tend to sit back and let him choose, because his expertise is much greater than mine.
Well, also, he's much harder than you, isn't he, to be fair?
Yeah, you wouldn't want to argue, no. Would you? No. But as a panellist, I mean, I think he is, you know, pretty much peerless.
Yes, I agree.
You know, he's opinionated, he's not malicious. I mean, he can read a game brilliantly. He was a fabulous player and a fabulous pundit as well. Ray is very different in a sense that you know what Ray's like. He's a lovely man.
Yeah.
You know, gentle character. He's the sort of guy. You know, you're always very happy when you see his name on the list of pundits to be travelling, because he's just a top-notch bloke, basically. Bloke is a good word for him. He's a top-notch bloke, you know, so good to be with. And, Ray's commentary can divide people a bit, you know, because some people think he should be more cutting. Yeah. Well, for me, he's lovely. I love listening to Ray because, you know, I can see him almost sitting up there with his carpet slippers on, you know, with nice cup of tea by his side and the such like, and watching the football and just telling us what he thinks as he sees it, and he can criticise people in the nicest way possible, you know.
He's on a first name basis with all of them, as we know from his.
He is, but he never wants to hurt anyone.
No.
But you know, he just criticises in a different manner to any other pundit, if you like. But it doesn't make it any less valid, you know.
Now, there's something about you, obviously, that draws catchphrases out of people. There's unbelievable, there's a fish up the tree, there's whatever else there is on a great soccer Saturday. Obviously, Ray, last season, there was the one game, I forget which game it was, but the catchphrase,
Stay
on your feet, was born. While that was going on, did you think, he said that a few times now, or did that just come after the show?
I remember thinking he'd said it a few times, but I didn't think that he'd said it as many times as perhaps people suggested to me. But, you know, sometimes, I mean, I know on Saturday, you get a phrase in your head, and it doesn't matter how much you're telling yourself mentally not to use that
again. Yeah.
You know, it pops out, and, you know, you give yourself the good old mental kicking again, but it still pops out, you know, and it was just one of those things, I think, you know. It was pretty sound advice at the time, by the way, because, you know, people were flying in, and it was Tottenham, wasn't it, in Madrid?
It was, yeah.
You know, people were flying in, and things were going from bad to worse for Tottenham. So, you know, I remember the evening, but, you know, I just think it was one of those things. It's the sort of thing I've done before, and I'm sure I'll do again.
What do people shout at you in the street? Do they shout unbelievable, Jeff, at you?
Yeah, generally. I mean, you'll find in... You know, sort of. I mean, you mentioned Countdown before, for example. In terms of Countdown, the number of contestants, generally speaking, towards the end of their run, you know, when I say, "Well, I hope you've enjoyed it," you know, Fred, Tony, Derek, you know, whatever, and they all say, "It's been unbelievable, Jeff."
Yeah, you know,
it's the one line that everybody uses. So, one or two shouted in the street. Not too many, but I don't mind. I can think of a lot worse things they could shout at me.
You'll be doing, one of the games you'll be doing Saturday is Chelsea, Sunderland. Yep. That's another of the Super Six games. You can play all the. You can play this along with the Super Six, of course. It's Super Six. That's the number six. Super6.skysports.com. Yep. One of the other games is Chelsea, Sunderland.
Yeah.
Where do you? I mean, Frank Lampard. Where do you stand on this? He was left out of the first game, which was a comfortable win. He wasn't really that great in a, you know. To be fair, it wasn't really his game, was he? He's not a holding midfielder. Is he coming to the end, or has he got a couple of seasons left in him?
Well, I mean, everybody's got, you know, a lifespan in the game, haven't they? And you know, I mean, Frank's nearer the finish than the start, that's for sure. I think it's too early to write him off, you know. I mean, what's he been in double figures in the Premier League every season, I think, for the last eight seasons off the top of something like that anyway, in terms of goals. He can't make those
long bursting
runs forward anymore. Maybe that's not the way Chelsea wanted to play anyway now. So I suspect his game is going to be adapted slightly, but he has been, you know, a fantastic performer for Chelsea, absolutely brilliant over the years. And I think it's too soon to write him off. Funnily enough, I was looking last season, you know, because, again, I play Sky Sports Fantasy Football, and he's not in my team, but I know a lot of people would be thinking about leaving him out after what's happened over the last couple of weeks. But before Christmas last season, he got one Premier League goal. And he finished it with 10.
Yes.
You know, so maybe it's just a bit early in the year for him. You know, maybe he reaches his peak a bit later in the season. So, no, I wouldn't write Frank off by any means. Look, it wouldn't be any surprise to me, you know, to see him in the sort of 85th minute or whatever, still bursting into the Sunderland penalty area to score the winning goal on Saturday. It's not necessarily my prediction, but it wouldn't surprise me.
No. I mean, an awful lot of new players who've swapped around in the transfer window you'll be dealing with this week.
Yeah.
A lot of suggestion this week as well that the transfer window is unfair, that it should end the week before the start of the season. What do you think of this? And if would Jim White actually explode if that happened?
I don't know what we do with Jim. You know, well, I mean, my view is that, you know, I remember the good old days. What I see is the good old days when there wasn't a transfer window at all. You could buy players right throughout the season and whenever you wanted to. And I think the idea behind the transfer window, you know, somewhere in the sort of deepest recesses of my mind was that, you know, if there was a window, it would allow managers during the course of the season to manage rather than to have constant, you know, transfer speculation over their players or to constantly be looking for players. But I preferred that system, I have to be honest, rather than this one wild dash at the end whenever it finishes. I'd much prefer a return to the old system where a player could move or a club could make a bid for a player at any stage of the season. You know?
Well, that would keep Jim in a constant state of arousal. If we're not a constant state of arousal, I don't want to see that.
No, you wouldn't want to see that, I'm sure. You know, so, yeah, absolutely. But I mean, it's mad, isn't it? I mean, you know, transfer deadline day. Look, it's great for Sky Sports News. It's absolutely great. And Whitey has made it his own, you know. I mean, the shots of him coming to the studio last
magnificent.
Week.
Magnificent.
You know, it was like the Chancellor of the Exchequer, wasn't it? Heading for 10 Downing Street, or heading leaving 11 Downing Street, rather, to head off to Parliament and things like that, or a new Prime Minister heading off to Buckingham Palace. It was up there with them. But I'm just not a fan of the whole system. I think, you know, there's so much panic buying. And, you know, there'll be a number of managers who live to regret what they've done in the last few minutes before the window's closed.
Yeah, yeah. Just finally then, back to Saturday, back to the Super Six.
Yep.
You're West Brom fans are very good at this, I believe. They're the top pickers on the Super Six website. If you're marking your card this weekend, we've done those three games. There's also Man City, Wigan. What are you looking for this weekend? Is there an upset on the cards there?
Well, not in Man City, Wigan. That is for sure. I don't know, you know. I mean, I look through, I'm trying to think what the six games, yeah, they're all Premier League games, aren't they?
They are, yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't, you know, I think Swansea could go to to the Emirates and make it tough for Arsenal. I certainly don't think there'll be a bag full of goals in that, that's for sure. You know, they've looked pretty solid defensively. Everton Villa, really tight game.
Not a lot of goals in Everton, is there?
No, not really.
And
no,
Richard Dunn and Shay Given magnificent the other night. You know.
But brilliant. I mean, you know, it was going to be one of the buys of the season. Arsenal should have bought him 2 years ago.
Yes.
Man City will beat Wigan. Stoke Liverpool now. I mean, that's an interesting game. You know, because obviously Stoke have been in, they've bought again. You know, Palacios, yeah, I think he could rediscover his form and do well. I think Crouch will do well. I'm not too sure where Cameron Jerome fits into Stoke's system, but I think they could give Liverpool, you know, it could be a handful for Liverpool, you know, it could be. And likewise, I think Sunderland could be a handful for Chelsea.
Well, of course, remember last season, you know?
Exactly, you know, and I keep mentioning fantasy football, but there were a lot of people who raised eyebrows when I put Asamoah Gyan in my side, and they've been right to raise eyebrows so far, but I remember him at Stamford Bridge last season when he was absolutely brilliant. And I'm hoping that Steve Bruce goes with you know, Asamoah Gyan and Bentner, who's got his critics, of which I'm one, but I see he scored twice in midweek for Denmark, you know, and give the Chelsea defence something to think about.
Yeah. And Wolves v Spurs, you're veering towards Spurs, yeah?
I'm veering towards a draw, to be absolutely honest. I think, you know, Wolves are much more competitive this season than last season. Roger Johnson, we all could see, you know, he's a gladiator, isn't he, at the back? Doesn't matter how hurt he is, you know, he'll put his body in front of every shot, every throw-in, every cross. You know, he's a fantastic signing for Wolves. I think it makes a big difference to them. But I can just see Spurs, you know, getting a foot on the ladder at least with a point at Wolves.
Excellent. Once again, Jeff Stelling, it's been unbelievable.
Thanks, Steve.
We'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
All the best, mate. Bye-bye.
That's going to wrap it up for another Mirror Football podcast. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. You can follow Robbie Savage on Twitter at RobbieSavage8. You can follow Ollie Holt on Twitter at OllieHoltMirror. You can follow Mirror Football on Twitter at Mirror Football. And don't forget, if you want to play Super 6 with Jeff Stelling, it's Super 6, that's the number 6, super6.skysports.com. See you next week.
The Daily Mirror calls on you.
Football is about nothing unless it's about something. And what it is about.
I am going to get 100% out of you.
Oh, now, of course, you're very, very, there's a different way.
Thank you for downloading this podcast. A Mirror Digital production. The Mirror Football podcast theme music is the cunningly titled Football by the band Peers. That's P-E-E-R-S. Check them out at myspace.com/wearepeers. myspace.com/wearepeers.